Berlin, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. A civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. After bird flu was found in it, health officials recommended people stop drinking unpasteurized milk. Now the U.S. Department of Agriculture will test samples nationwide.
The federal government says that the newly ordered tests of raw milk samples for bird flu will start in less than 2 weeks. They'll take place at large dairy processing facilities in about 10 states as the USDA tries to drill down what farms and which herds are infected. Right now, how big of a problem this is a bit of a mystery.
ABC's Stephen Osunsami escaped from New York. Police here say the man believed to have shot and killed United Healthcare chief exec Brian Thompson this week got on a bus out of town shortly after the killing. The FBI is offering a $50,000 reward. A Supreme Court ruling got convicted January 6 rioter Guy Reffitt out of one count. The judge who initially sentenced him to 87 months in prison resentenced Reffitt Friday to 80 months. This is ABC News. It always happens at the end of the year, especially when the White House is changing hands.
The White House wouldn't comment on reports that President Biden is considering preemptive pardons for people who they think may be targeted under the incoming Trump administration. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
I'm not going to get ahead of the president, but what I can say is that the president is reviewing other pardons and commutations.
A source close to the president told ABC he's considering pardons for people like Dr. Anthony Fauci, former Congresswoman Liz Cheney, and General Mark Milley, the former chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Karen Travers, ABC News, the White House.
Not that they're counting the days. Astronauts Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore marked 6 months on the International Space Station Thursday, a week-long test flight months ago of Boeing's troubled Starliner capsule has kept the two there since, and they won't be returning to Earth for 2 more months. I'm Richard Cantu, ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WISS News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section at WISS.FM.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Aaron Sommers, so you watched a film called Hot Frosty.
The main character puts a scarf that she does not know is enchanted around this snowman, and he comes to life, and he starts streaking through the town.
Is there any sex in this movie, Aaron?
There is not.
I think they're missing a perfect thing to go with a fetish snowman thing here.
Gotta bet that audience is huge. What's your kink? Snowman.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Matt and Air on Air.
This shouldn't be a thing.
Michigan man leads lawnmower chase. I'll stop, says the suspect. Instead, he reaches under the seat and pulls out a gun.
Shoots himself in the hand.
The deputy has his taser trained on him, and yes, he tased him.
I'm not advocating for crime, but boost something that goes faster than cop on foot.
Matt and Air on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Nearly one in five Wisconsin newspapers shut down in the last year. It paints a grim picture for the future of local news provided by journalists who live in the communities they serve. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
This year alone, 130 newspapers nationwide shut down, according to a report by the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. But amid an increasing climate of misinformation and media distrust among some Americans, the news outlets they say they trust the most are community newspapers. Professor Robert Aysen at the University of Wisconsin at Madison says in this polarized climate, where people choose to get their news matters.
It seems less and less that we're willing or able to see things that we may share in common. And that's exacerbated by a media ecosystem where we're not even getting the same information, where we're not even sharing the same basic set of facts.
A recent review of radio talk shows in Wisconsin found those with the largest audiences and the most advertising are led by conservative hosts who air the most misinformation. Aysen says leadership is a major influence in this trend.
When you look at public discourse and you look at public figures and you see examples of a disregard for truth or disregard for verifying stories or a disregard for fair and kind of accurate representations, I think that those practices encourage more of the same practice.
Wisconsin Democrats proposed a package of bills earlier this year aimed at strengthening local journalism and its workforce. One bill would offer a tax credit for local newspaper subscriptions, but it didn't pass in the state Senate.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, a mostly clear sky, a low in the low 20s. With sunshine for tomorrow, it'll warm up into the low 40s for a high. Increasing clouds for Sunday, a high around 40, chance of showers Sunday night. Currently, it's 19 degrees.
From Oshkosh to Neenah, this is 98.3 WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Buck, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call. You can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We have a jam-packed show for you today. John Dietrich from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has written extensively about guns in Wisconsin and recently did a big investigative piece yesterday about the number of children who are shot accidentally by guns in the state. So John is going to talk to us about that. And also when it comes to charging and bringing charges in these cases, he looked at that pretty extensively. And so we're going to talk to John Dietrich coming up right after the 10:30 news. It is Friday. That means Dan Schaefer will be here from the recombobulation area at 11:33. Lori Leshman is part of a fundraiser for the Waukesha South Cookie Walk.
Yeah.
They're trying to raise money for the Waukesha South Band. I love stuff like that.
I wish I just had so much money. I could be like, how much money do you need? I mean, I love cookies and I love walking. Well, I just love cookies. But I would love to be like, how much?
Let me just, here you go. Here's what you
need. Here's your money. Enjoy.
Take it away.
Here's some extra. Get some fringe.
But if you're in the Waukesha area, the Cookie Walk is happening tomorrow.
Yeah.
So you can pick up some delicious treats and at the same time help support the band program. So Lori's joining us at 11:33, and we will wrap it all up as we do every day with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it's the Thanks, I'll Pass edition.
Comes courtesy of one of our producers, Cardi Glisper, who works with Maggie.
Maggie's.
Yep.
Ugh. Yeah, it's there will be a video component. After the show is over in the show notes, we'll include it so you can take a look yourself. Speaking of Tisbat.
Yeah.
We're going to do a best of Tisbat for New Year's Eve Day.
We are.
We determined this in the meeting that we had yesterday.
I wasn't listening.
So if you have a suggestion for a favorite Tisbat.
Yes.
We've been doing it for a couple of months now. Mm-hmm. You can always email your suggestions for the best of.
Yeah.
This Shouldn't Be a Thing. And we'll do that on New Year's Eve Day. You can always email us at Jane Says, JaneSays, Jane Says at civicmedia.us.
But Jane, what if they're like, I don't know them all. I don't remember. I mean, they're all amazing.
You know what's so easy?
How would they go back and find them?
You would go to civicmedia.us.
Okay.
That's our website.
Yeah.
And you click on shows.
Yes.
You click on Matinair on Air.
That's us.
That takes you to our page.
Correct.
This Shouldn't Be a Thing is actually its own podcast.
Yes. So when you go to this, when you go to our show notes, our show page, on the right, you'll see a graphic with Jane and I where it says This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Click that. And that is all of the This Shouldn't Be a Thing separated as their own podcast, about 8 minutes. It's the last segment of the show.
Right.
And you can listen to every single one we've done so far and go back, listen, let us know what you like. Don't let us know what you hate, because that hurts my feelings. But we want to know your thoughts. What are your favorites? And we'll incorporate, maybe do like a Viewer's Choice Award.
We can do a countdown.
Ooh.
A Tisbat countdown to that.
Watch out, Dick Clark. We're coming for the crown.
Oh, absolutely. So, yes, please, we would love to hear from you. If you have a favorite This Shouldn't Be a Thing segment, check them all out.
Yeah.
And you can sign up to get the podcast, right?
Yeah, you will get, for our show, you would get three podcasts, actually. You would get the first hour, the second hour, and then Tisbat as its own 8-minute little snack.
A little bonus.
You're going outside for a little walk? Take us with you.
Absolutely. Little 8 minutes.
That's right.
To make you laugh. All right. We're going to start off with this from WPR. This is from Anya Van Wektendonk. The legislature's budget committee is shaping up. Its members hold sway over state spending. We are talking about, of course, JFC, the Joint Finance Committee.
Wisconsin. Not the Janesville Fried Chicken.
No, I was thinking of something else, too. Wisconsin Senate leaders have chosen 8 lawmakers to serve on the Joint Finance Committee. Very, very important committee. They sit on all the money.
They're literally sitting on money.
Yes, that has already been approved.
We've talked about this so much.
I know, but it's worth reminding
folks. Oh, I totally agree.
It is a 16-person committee. It meets in its very own conference room. Ew.
Wow.
In the east wing of the Capitol, and reviews and controls how state government spends its money. They will, of course, be looking at the governor's budget proposal. They will rework it. They're very, very, very powerful. And I personally would blame them for the lack of things that get done in Wisconsin.
Yes, there are many things that, and that's not even, that's that problem that I really, really have personally, is that it's not even a matter of them voting things out of the committee into the actual assembly in the state Senate. These are measures that have been voted on. They are approved. The dollars are allocated. And the Joint Finance Committee is just doing nothing.
Yeah.
And folks, this isn't pork barrel spending. This isn't the, you know, super duper liberal think tank of Wisconsin funding. This is water, clean water.
Clean water.
For up north. This is hospital relief for the hospitals that have closed in western Wisconsin.
Yes.
This is PFAS.
Poison in our water.
It is also school. It is funding school measures that are already being implemented now.
Mandated programs.
That have been paid for with whatever money they could find. This is investment money in the state, period. Yes. Nothing
it's
else.
It's not wasteful. I wouldn't consider it wasteful spending.
It's not partisan spending. It's money that goes to our health, our hospitals, our children. I don't really know if there are like bigger things to worry about.
The majority party, the majority party on the Joint Finance Committee holds 12 seats. The minority party has 4. That's wildly unbalanced.
No, I agree.
That means Republicans have run the Joint Finance Committee since they took control of the legislature in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
On Wednesday, Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu announced his 6 picks for the committee. Senate Minority Leader Dianne Hesselbein announced her 2 picks. Not many changes. The Republicans who will be returning to the JFC are Senator Howard Markline, Senator Eric Wimberger, and Senator Patrick Testin, Senator Romaine Quinn, Julian Bradley, and Bob Schaffschultz will also be serving for the first time. For the Democrats, Senator LaTanya Johnson and Senator Kelda Royce have both been reappointed. Mm-hmm. The remainder will be appointed from the Assembly.
Oh, grand.
Yeah. So Popcorn King Robin Voss gets to make some picks along with Democratic Minority Leader Greta Neubauer. But again, the Republicans hold 12 seats on the Joint Finance Committee. The Democrats hold 4.
That just seems like that's 16. I get it. If you were in charge, you it's the spoils of war. And I would just think if there are 16 seats, maybe give the Republicans like 9 seats and the Democrats get 7 seats. Just 8-4. That's what's the point?
Well, exactly. I mean, I'll just go attend the meetings, I guess.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to have much sway.
Yeah.
I mean, you certainly want to have someone in the room where it happens.
You want Hamilton reference. I think it's important. I mean, it's at this point, it's just almost advocacy, which isn't a bad thing. But like, you're just saying, hey, we should do this. And the Republicans get to pat us on our heads and say, that's adorable.
Aren't you cute?
They still get to drink poisoned water. And that is the truth, folks. They're drinking poisoned water right now.
Meetings of the Joint Finance Committee, according to this article, often last long into the night and are marked by contentious partisan bickering. Many votes decided along party lines. The big decisions get made by the majority party in private, with the public meeting devoted to speeches and votes.
Oh, bloviating.
The decisions get made by the majority party in private.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The public meetings devoted to bloviating.
Yep. You know, chest puffery.
The two parties have different priorities. Republicans, under the leadership of Robin Voss, have said tax cuts, lowering spending are part of their agenda. Democrats have called for spending Wisconsin surplus on priorities like schools and childcare. Childcare continues to be a major issue, not just in Wisconsin, but this is a nationwide problem. And tragically, it seems like we keep losing dairy farmers and childcare centers.
Yeah, it's not even about, I mean, this whole thing of like tax cuts, they want to take our surplus. They've done this to us before when we had money. They gave it back to the voters, but it came in the form of minuscule like tax breaks
for average people.
One tax break was like $13 from homeowners if you had a certain size home. The biggest, I think, was $75.
Life-changing, Greg.
Oh, my gosh. I can almost pay the processing fee on my mortgage payment. Yay! So they've never been able to make the case of tax cuts to make me say, oh, well, maybe we should listen to them. It's always, it's blowing our surplus completely out of the water, and then giving it back to us in minuscule forms, or just giving their buddies big breaks.
Well, that does seem to be the way things tend to go.
Yeah.
Right? Let's help out our really, really wealthy donors.
Yeah.
And that way, if they have a tax break, then they can give us more money.
And when
the next time we run.
And the really rich people who don't get those tax breaks just hear tax breaks and they go, my guy's doing tax breaks. I'm like, show me your tax forms. I want to see how it benefited you.
Again, nothing is going to change.
No.
They still have some appointments to make, but the imbalance will remain. Mm-hmm. So, but I think it's important that we keep an eye on them. And I am grateful for all of the resources like WPR and all the other places and the Civic News team as well for keeping an eye on these folks, because we need to know what's going on. All right. When we return, Milwaukee in the White House. Another Wisconsin name.
Oh, that's right.
Heading into the Trump administration. We'll have all the details on the way next. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
She gets mad and she starts to cry. A swing man. She can't hurt. She don't mean no harm. She just don't know what else to do about it.
Listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for the Maggie Dawn Show.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
From the lakeshore to Lake Winnebago.
Door to Fond du Lac counties.
Northeast Wisconsin is special for many different reasons. I'm Lisa Hale.
And I'm Terry Barr. Family and fun.
Safe communities and friends. We're featuring all of it as part of New Wisco Weekend, a news magazine show just for you, and highlighting what makes the Fox Valley and Green Bay area a great place to live. Join us.
New Wisco Weekend, Saturday mornings at 8, Sundays at 11 on WGBW and WISS and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning. Welcome. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call. You can text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. After the 10:30 news, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter John Dietrich will be joining us. He just dropped a new piece yesterday in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the number of children, tragically, who are victims of accidental gun deaths. And so we're going to talk about some of his findings from that and hopefully maybe look forward at what we can do to kind of reduce this number.
Yeah.
But we wanted to highlight another piece of Wisconsin heading into the White House. Of course, we have Sean Duffy.
Oh.
Formerly reality TV star. Fox News guy. He's apparently driven on roads. Sean Duffy will be Secretary of Transportation.
And he's lived in the real world.
He has lived in the real world. Now we have Fiserv CEO Frank Bisignano has been named Commissioner of the Social Security Administration. What are you laughing at?
I'm not laughing. I'm just, if I had pearls, I'd clutch them. Just because. It's just like, why?
Here is what Donald Trump said, quote, "I am very pleased to nominate Frank Bisignano to serve as the commissioner of the Social Security Administration. Frank is a business leader with a tremendous track record of transforming large corporations. Social Security is not a company.
Nope.
He will be responsible to deliver on the agency's commitment to the American people for generations to come," unquote. The 65-year-old will oversee the Social Security Administration, over 1,200 field offices, almost 60,000 employees. SSI delivers retirement, disability, and survivor benefits to almost 70 million Americans every month.
I have a question for resident young person Calvin. Do you have any faith that you will ever see a Social Security check in your life?
I have this naive hope that we're going to weather some bad storms in the next 4, maybe even 10 years, but I have faith in the path of justice and human.
Wow.
Like,
he's young. He's still progress.
Maybe it's naive, but I have hope that maybe in 25 years, we'll have this all figured out.
I asked that question, Calvin, and thank you so much. I asked that question because when I see an appointment like this, who Trump is now just saying a business, he sees everything as a business. Calvin, you're better than I am. If I was your age, I would be terrified right now. I'm 46, and I have very little hope of seeing all of the money that I've put away. And I can only imagine when this guy, who has no expertise in Social Security other than he hired an HR person to take care of the distributions and whatever, he's going to gut this, or they're going to find ways to privatize this or give it a sunset where, all right, folks, if you are 65 and over, you will enjoy Social Security. This age, you'll get half. This, 10%. This,
and yeah, and if you're this, yeah, and if you're, you know, 25, you're going to get Zippo.
Exactly.
In 2023, Mr. Bisignano, I apologize. In 2023, he was the highest paid CEO among Wisconsin's 25 largest public companies, earning close to $28 million. That is not over the course of his career. That is annually. And I guess that is my sticking point. Yeah. And all props to you for, obviously, he's been successful.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's head of Fiserv Forum. He's been involved in money managing and all that stuff for a long time, and good on you. But I fail to see how someone who makes $28 million a year can relate at all to someone who is dependent on Social Security to live.
Yeah, I mean, excuse me. I don't think being rich precludes you from being a part of it, but you have to have some sort of expertise and in that world. Work, whether you work for, whether you like, you're someone who, hey, I used to help people sign up for their Social Security cards and I worked my way up and now I'm in charge of all this, or someone who's worked in a place of financial planning. That sounds weird, but like, you can be rich and be a part of this, but there's no empathy. There's no heart to the American people, especially those who are on it, that this man can, there's nothing there. I'm sorry. I don't buy it.
Sue from Franklin texting in says he's a New Yorker. I worked for Fiserv for many years. Just another out of touch billionaire controlling the lives of the middle class. I don't disagree with you, yeah. Sue. And again, I think that's great. He's been very successful. Good on you. But, you know, if he would talk about maybe, what was it, the cap, putting a cap on so that billionaires like him would have to pay more into Social Security. Mm-hmm. If he started talking about something like that.
Oh,
I'm sure that's going to happen.
Today was the first and last day of Mr. Frank Fiserv's tenure as cabinet secretary. Yeah, he'd be out in an instant. The moment there was any sort of equity, equality, anything like that, justice for the people with regard to Social Security, he's gone. But he wants people to run every aspect of this country like a business.
And he is used to operating at a profit, with that being his only goal.
Yeah.
Right? Is to make a profit for shareholders.
Oh, yes. I mean, this gentleman, I don't want to butcher his last name.
Bazignano.
Bazignano?
I think so.
Okay.
Close enough.
I thought his name was Frank Fiserv. But I think, like, you know, he, at the very least, he actually has success at running a business versus the guy who's going to be in charge, who is not good at running businesses. But I don't want anyone trying to. You can't run a country like a business.
No, you just can't.
And you can't run a country like your family. That's the other thing people say, things like, well, why don't you just run it like you run your own finances in your house? I don't have, like,
60,000 people under you?
Yeah, I don't have, like, cabinet secretaries who are in charge. I don't have department heads in my home. Stop being naive. We need experts, and this man is not one of them.
Interesting times.
Yep.
Interesting times. News is coming up, by the way. Calvin, Tom on the live stream says, nice haircut. Looking good.
Thanks, nice. Tom.
When we return, John Dietrich from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel will be here to talk about his latest investigative piece. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome to the Fox Valley's Real News and Great Conversation, WISS.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. After bird flu was found in it, health officials recommended people stop drinking unpasteurized milk. Now the U.S. Department of Agriculture will test samples nationwide.
The federal government says that the newly ordered tests of raw milk samples for bird flu will start in less than 2 weeks. They'll take place at large dairy processing facilities in about 10 states, as the USDA tries to drill down what farms and which herds are infected. Right now, how big of a problem this is a bit of a mystery.
ABC's Stephen Osunsami escaped from New York. Police here say the man believed to have shot and killed United Healthcare chief exec Brian Thompson this week got on a bus out of town shortly after the killing. The FBI is offering a $50,000 reward. A Supreme Court ruling got convicted January 6 rioter Guy Reffitt out of one count. The judge who initially sentenced him to 87 months in prison resentenced Reffitt Friday to 80 months. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media.
Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Bucks lose in Boston. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks kept it close. The game featured 11 ties, 14 lead changes, but Boston pulled away and got the win, 111-105. Doc Rivers pretty much summed it all up.
I thought we played great basketball for 3.5 quarters, and then I thought in the fourth quarter, the last 7 minutes, we went away from our execution that we're doing all game. A lot of tough shots. So, good learner for us. You know, the one thing when you watch them, they don't do that. They resist. Even in their ISOs, when they're covered, they put the ball on the floor to make plays for each other. I didn't think we did that tonight.
The Bucks are now 0-9 when they play in Boston. Men's college basketball today. Marquette hosting Wisconsin this afternoon in Milwaukee. The women's college volleyball tournament, the Badgers and Golden Eagles, are in the Sweet 16, headed to the regionals next week. Last night, the Badgers beat number 7th-ranked Georgia Tech at the Fieldhouse in Madison 3-1. Marquette held out in a thriller over Utah 3-2. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, a mostly clear sky, a low in the low 20s. With sunshine for tomorrow, it'll warm up into the low 40s for a high. Increasing clouds for Sunday, a high around 40. Chance of showers Sunday night. Currently, it's 19 degrees.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
We know what happened the last time Trump applied this ham-fisted tariff policy. He had to write a $12 billion check to farmers because he crushed so many of our agricultural exports and drove up the cost of single-family homes because the cost of lumber from places like Canada went way the frick up. Everything got more expensive.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
Cash Patel, who Trump has nominated to be the head of the FBI, said he wants to basically shut down the main parts of the FBI. Bill Barr, MAGA Republican Attorney General to Donald Trump. Quote, the very idea of moving Patel into a role like this showed a shocking detachment from reality. Unquote. This is not the left calling out Patel. This is the right.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us. It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Mach, and Sweet Kelby on the board coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 11 o'clock news, Dan Schaefer will be here from the recombobulation area, so stick around for that. Right now, though, we are joined by Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter John Dietrich. Good morning, John. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Good morning, Jane. Pleasure to be here.
You are out with a new investigation that dropped this week in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Here is the headline. Her son shot himself by accident with her gun. Should she be charged with a felony in Wisconsin? It depends. It's a really sad article to read, and I give you a lot of credit for, I can't imagine the amount of time it took for you to do this piece. What were some of the biggest takeaways for you after you wrapped up your investigation, John?
Well, thanks for having me. So this is part of a investigation I started last year called Behind the Gun. And what we were really setting out to do through the O'Brien Fellowship at Marquette was be able to look at gun deaths in a different way. So we spent a lot of time last year writing about suicides instead of revealing the full extent. And this year we pivoted to a much smaller category. In fact, unintentional or accidental shootings are the smallest category of shootings. I think they feel like they're more because, especially when children are involved, they get a lot of publicity, and rightly so. But they are 1% of all shootings, and 5% of all shootings among children are accidentals. And what I wanted to do was look specifically at how often they happen in Wisconsin, and specifically by county. And then what is the system's response? And depending on the response, what are the stories of both of what happened before the shooting and what happened after? And here's some of what I can tell you is that, like I said, they are rare, they are tragic, and they are highly preventable. They happen more often in Milwaukee County than anywhere else in the state. And they're also charged differently in Milwaukee County than anywhere else in the state. So for just to give you an idea of ballpark, I mean, every year there's about 15 to 20 of these types of accidental shootings involving children under the age of 18 statewide. About half of those happen in Milwaukee County. And then of those 15 to 20, there would be between seven and the largest year was seven or two, between the low of two and a high of seven of actual deaths during that time. In Milwaukee County, there is a state law that says this should be a misdemeanor, passed in 1991. However, in Milwaukee County, this conduct is charged whether a child died or not, actually, regardless of the severity of the injury, this is charged as felony conduct. And it has been for 8 years, according to our review, overwhelmingly. We located 54 cases during that time. And 52 were charged as felonies, including the case that that you mentioned at the beginning of Brianna Givens.
Why is this handled so differently in Milwaukee County?
Well, I spoke at length to the deputy district attorney in charge of this unit, Matthew Torbenson, and his argument is you know, sort of tiered. And he's been in the office for 20 years handling cases involving children and child neglect and so forth. His view is that treating this, especially something that could easily become a really grave injury or death and is also preventable, is not a misdemeanor. And that the statute that was passed in 91 is, in his words, woefully inadequate. And while it's being charged in other counties, he's like, I'm not in other counties, I'm in Milwaukee, but this is how this should be charged. The other, in his view, the other reason that they're charged that way is he is seeking to have the right to own a firearm be withdrawn. In other words, a felony conviction means that you can't own a gun anymore. So there's a pragmatic reason why he's charging felonies in these cases. And it is... It's a significant thing to charge a felony. We can talk about sort of the downstream effects. The majority of these defendants, while there are cases where people are, you know, sort of, you know, be involved in drug dealing or things like that and leave guns around, more often they are relatives of the victim. Those relatives are most often the mother or the father. They generally do not have criminal records. In the end, the result is usually not prison. It's usually a short jail term or it's probation. However, there's a lot of downstream effects that happen as the result of the charging, and that's what we wrote about a little bit. So, but that's the logic that Torbenson has as to why he charges these the way he does.
John, with regards to taking away the right to own after the charge has been made, would that just be in Milwaukee County, or would that be valid throughout the state? And then the other question I have is, do you see other counties who are trying to adopt the same measure to increase the severity of those charges to, I don't want to say it's a deterrent, I don't want to say they're going to deter, but just to, you know, make heavier the sentence?
Yeah, those are good questions, Greg. So a felony conviction means no gun anywhere, ever, in the United States.
Oh, okay.
So, yep. So that would be a prohibitor. That's one of the prohibitors under federal law, as it stands, you know, violent or non. So, yeah, that's a lifetime prohibition from firearms unless that's removed. And so we are seeing, and I also think it's worth noting, and we can talk a little bit about this, in that as we analyzed these cases, we found that, you know, the reason why these firearms were being kept in the first place were for self-defense, their home defense, self-defense, and so forth. So as one editor put it, and parents, I have to say, just I've talked to a lot of parents, there's a lot of punishment that comes regardless of what the system does when your child is shot with a firearm. Like, it's a huge punishment. It's what, you know, sort of like the system calls sort of like punishment enough that lands on a parent to see your child injured. And, you know, the thing that my editor, or one of the editors, pointed out is she said, well, is there a, basically that, you know, there is the reason why the person bought the firearm is maybe still a valid reason even after the worst day of their life. In other words, they still feel unsafe, mm-hmm. maybe because of a batterer in their background, because of the neighborhood that they live in, other circumstances, because risk is not evenly distributed, and fear is not evenly distributed. And some of that may be based in reality and not, but that's something to sort of think about, why these guns are there, because they're all pretty much self-defense guns. But to your point about other counties, there are felonies that are charged outstate. I don't want to leave people with the impression that there's zero felonies, sort of they're all felonies in Milwaukee, zero. And we are seeing some movement. I don't know if movement's the right word. We've seen a couple cases outstate where I think Torvenson, talking to prosecutors in other counties, specifically there's a case in Brown County right now that is charged as a felony. That's a death case. We also see cases that are relatively recent that are very similar conduct, and those are being charged as misdemeanors under the 91 law.
If you're just joining us, John Dietrich is our guest. He's an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Does excellent, excellent work. And we're talking about his latest piece about the number of children who are killed accidentally by guns. And let's talk a little bit more specifically about Breonna Givens, John, which is the case that you start with. And I guess what I think is important, at least for me in reading this story, is I live in the city of Milwaukee, too. My existence is completely different than this woman's. You know what I mean? And I think sometimes mm-hmm. we forget that there's different things going on in different neighborhoods, and people feel much more at risk and in danger. And that's why they go to get a gun for protection, as you said.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because I think that there have been, you're not the first person to say that, people who have been concerned and are realizing that they are, and I'm in the same boat. I'm fortunate to live in a pretty, you know, pretty safe area, pretty well policed area. Response time is very fast in my neighborhood, I just saw last week. So anyway, I appreciate you sharing that. Yeah, so the story with Breonna Givens is, you know, this story was written about back after it happened in March of 2020. Short story, basically said, mom leaves a loaded gun under her mattress. She's asleep on top of the mattress. She had taken muscle relaxants, and a two-year-old shot himself in the hand. Like, that's basically the criminal complaint. It's really bad on a number of levels. Loaded unsecured gun, muscle relaxants, and so forth. Well, here's the rest of the story. So Breonna Givens is the mother of three. She is a nurse. What happens around 2020 is that her cousin is driving to go take her to the grocery store. They're going together. He said, I just need to make a stop over here in the city. And what she didn't know is that he was going to settle a beef with somebody, and a big shootout happened over on Burleigh, and she ended up bailing out of the car, running. Somebody, one of the guys that her cousin was getting into it with, caught her, put a gun to her head, and threatened to kill her. And so what happened was she identified the individuals to the police from social media and so forth, but the identification wasn't enough and nobody was charged. So she went and bought a gun, and
I'm sorry to interrupt you, because she was afraid these people were going to come after her.
That's right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So this is a situation where, and she said she had a gun safe at one time. And she said she probably wouldn't have used it then anyway, because she would just lay awake at night, sort of you know, waiting for something to happen and so forth. So then just to the day that happened, this happened in October of 2020, she was working, staff nursing. That's actually when Delta and, you know, some of those variants were really going bonkers. And she had sciatica in her back, and she had come home, took a muscle relaxant, fell asleep, and her son, Devin, shot himself in the hand. And then, you know, ultimately she called the police, called 911. It went through the webbing of his hand. So, you know, there's no unserious gunshot wound. And it was a non-fatal. Any case, the police came, they arrested her immediately. She spent 5 days in jail, wasn't told anything about her son's conduct or her son's condition. I'm sorry. And then she came out, and really at that point, that's when things really unraveled for her. Once she was charged with a felony, Child Protective Services came over, you know, naturally to sort of evaluate. She lost her job as a nurse because of felony neglect charge. She was charged with felony child neglect, so she lost her job. She was evicted. She became homeless. And then ultimately, she did end up settling for a neglect. It's a misdemeanor, but it still has neglect. So she had to withdraw from her nursing degree at MATC, and she was 2 years into that. She finished. It was a probation sentence, but because of the conviction involving neglect, she can't get a job in healthcare or education. So she's waiting tables now to pay for things. And she just felt like there was, you know, was there, cause she didn't, she admits that what she did was terrible, that if she did buy a gun again, she would do this. She agreed with the parenting class that she took and the firearms class, all those things she agreed with. She just said, did I have to be put through, you know, being charged with a felony now? And that felony just sits out there too. I mean, even though she pled down, prospective employers or landlords, you know, can see that, you know, online. And hers isn't the only case. This was the one that I highlighted, but I did hear this type of story a number of times talking to defendants.
We're going to continue our conversation with John Dietrich, an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and we will include a link to John's terrific article in the show notes. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy. We're talking about the Act 10 overturned by a Dane County judge.
I think it's important for everyone to know that this was the state that in 1959 first granted public employees the right to organize and bargain collectively. We have a lot to take back. You know, I used to say take back America, but I say take back Wisconsin.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Allbush Show.
Pat Kreitlow, all your time in the media, television, radio, what have you, what was one or two of the oddest things that people were complaining about?
As a TV anchor, your hair.
You have some of the finest hair around. How could anybody criticize your hair?
Oh, well, because a consultant forced me to change it.
Were there focus groups?
I'm not aware of any focus groups other than the audience, which universally hated it. It was a bowl haircut.
The Todd Allbush Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
This is the Fox Valley's Real News and Great Conversation, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good morning and welcome back to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin B. on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Our guest is John Dietrich, an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Just dropped this new piece yesterday about accidental shootings, mm-hmm. especially among children. And we did have a question on the live stream for you, John, from Alicia.
Alicia asked, felony convictions is a lifetime prohibited. I thought it was just until they had served their sentence.
No,
it's a lifetime.
It's a lifetime prohibition until it's voting that your records. But if you have a, and that's where, that's where felon in possession comes in. So if you have an existing felony, the charge for that would be if it's unreversed, mm-hmm. you could finish a term. You could have a felony from many years ago. And if it's on your record, has not been reversed, expunged or whatnot, your voting rights are restored upon completletion. But the felony conviction, if unreversed, remains a lifetime prohibition.
Before we went to the breakdown, we were talking about some of the downstream effects of cases like this, and in particular, Brianna. And again, by her own admission, she was not necessarily very responsible. In this instance, her son was injured but not killed. But then, as you said, it was charged as a felony. Then she lost her job. Then she lost her ability to become a nurse and work in healthcare because of this. She got evicted. Now, and so the ramifications on that entire family, she's got two other children. It's just, It seems vastly unfair.
Yeah, it's a really difficult situation when you see all the consequences that come downstream. And then what we really sought to do in this article is, and people have commented to me, they're like, I'm not sure how to feel after this. And that's kind of on purpose. Like, that was Greg Borowski, my editor, and I made a very clear effort to say to call it complicated is it's complicated. And what we're looking at is, what does society do in these cases? What do parents do in these cases? What's the impact? Because, when you sit and the piece starts off with sort of, you go into the scene of Brianna and then you go to Matt Torvenson's office and you see what comes across his desk. As he says in the piece, I've seen every autopsy photo. I've seen what these bullets do to children. And these are things that can be solved. This is not, you can keep a gun for self-defense, and it needs to be entirely inaccessible to children. Those are not mutually exclusive things. And so from his side of it, he's saying society has to do something. And from her side, she's like, did you have to do that? Like, this seems so blunt as to far as the tool. Can there be some discretion? And he would say, well, yeah, we get to that downstream when we get to sentencing and it ends up being probation and so forth. But we're going to take these and make these, very serious at the front end. And it really gets at the heart of whether these laws actually accomplish what they're set out to do, right? And these are really popular. They're increasingly passing. They're called child access protection laws or safe stores laws. And there's research that indicates, or that has supported for years, that this drives down or essentially changes people's habits, storage practices. What it really says is that really somebody's fear of being locked up is going to be greater than their fear of their children being hurt. Like that's what's at the heart of those laws.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned about losing my security. And so there's some change in that right here, but it really is a preventative thing. There really is technology that allows us to change this. And I think that to me, if there's an encouraging part of it, is there's a way out of this. There really is a way out of this. And it's through education and through storage, that if somebody wants to have a firearm available, readily accessible, and also totally inaccessible to their children, biometric safes and other technology absolutely allow that to happen. It's a fixable problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's not new either. That's not new technology either. Right. These practices, these products have been around for a very long time, and it's easier than ever to have a firearm and be safe at home.
Well, but I guess what's got to be frustrating is, I mean, didn't Brianna, she took gun safety classes. She actually went and took those things, which a lot of people, you don't have to do that.
That's right. She did. She did concealed carry. She did another class. And I think what's a recognition is, I talked to a gun. So there's a gun trainer that I interviewed. We did another piece about, he comes to people's homes and does a safety storage plan and safety plan in the home. The idea is that if he gets a firearm, it's a commitment. It's a commitment to an item that has great consequences. Yeah. If it is, it's not a benign object. It's not just laying there. It has a lot of potential, depending if it's not secured. And I think changing the conversation, because some of what comes around is like, let's just blanket everybody with cable locks, for instance. Well, you know, and they're like, what harm could that prove? Well, they're not really useful. They've got the little keys. They're cheap. You know, you get what you pay for, which is zero, and you can break them, and they don't actually meet people where they're at, like what they really need, or messaging that says, hey, keep your gun unloaded, locked, and separated from the ammunition. That's not really going to help. So I think try to messaging for stuff where people are live is what I'm hearing a desire for.
It's a fantastic piece. We will include it in the show notes. Please take a look at it and give it a good read. John Dietrich, an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Always appreciate your time, John. Thank you so very, very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
News is coming up next. When we return, Dan Schaefer will be here from the Recombobulation area. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for Matt Nair on Air.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
This is your local Civic Media radio station.
Want to hear even more? Anytime?
Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Thank you for listening to WISS Berlin, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. One step closer to a TikTok ban, a federal appeals panel upheld the law requiring TikTok to be sold to a U.S.-approved owner or be shut down.
TikTok says it will look to the Supreme Court. A big question is where President-elect Trump now stands. In his first term, Trump called for a ban on TikTok, and his incoming FCC chair has long advocated for that. But in this last campaign, Trump suggested he would save the app. The law upheld by the appeals court requires a sale by January 19th, allowing for a one-time presidential waiver based on active steps to divest.
ABC's Stephen Portnoy. The FBI says it's assisting New York police in this week's murder of UnitedHealthcare chief exec Brian Thompson. Police say the assassin hopped the bus out of New York after the killing. A source tells ABC News President-elect Trump called President Biden over the holiday to wish him happy Thanksgiving, their first chat since Trump visited the White House after winning the election. This is ABC News. A Just Say No proposal in Texas has Republicans in that state split. ABC's Jim Ryan tells the tale.
While a growing number of states legalize recreational marijuana, Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick has made banning all consumable THC in Texas a legislative priority. Some of his fellow Republicans can't support that.
If it'll help a toothache, I'm for it.
Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller favors expanding access to medical marijuana.
Anything that will relieve pain or suffering for somebody, we just need to open it up to everybody.
But the Lieutenant Governor is priming the legislature for a clampdown on THC. Jim Ryan, ABC News, Dallas.
Talk about a blast from the past. 20 years after the